Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks. Welcome to another week on planet Earth. Quite a thing. Looking for an answer to this disappearing job phenomena that's happening on this planet. That Brookings study, quite revealing. The main quote from that, the main takeaway is not everyone needs to go to a coding boot camp, but they probably do need to know Excel.
Well, I bet our next guest will have something to say about that, about
that's true.
How to prepare for the future.
That's true. That's one of the things we're going to ask him. We have Rizwan, or Riz Virk, is an entrepreneur, angel investor, best-selling author, video game industry pioneer, independent film producer. He runs Bayview Labs and Playlads at MIT, which is a startup accelerator on MIT's campus. He's got his BS from MIT and MS in management from Stanford's Graduate Business School. So, Riz, thanks for coming on the show.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, you know, it's interesting. We were talking to you just on the announcement of the Brookings study about how digitalization of jobs is rapidly changing the American workforce. And you had written a book called Treasure Hunt, which is about finding real success in the world. And it doesn't appear to be jobs the way things are going. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah. So, you know, my book Treasure Hunt is really about finding the calling or the work that you are meant to do in this life.
Exactly, exactly. Maybe it's something else other than the typical job scene for most people.
Right. And it could be, you know, something that you're doing on the side. It could be a creative project. Typically, I think we all have strengths and weaknesses as we come into this life, and we see things in the world, opportunities that call out to us. I got started with computers at a relatively young age, and you know, I knew I wanted to be a computer programmer. My first program was a tic-tac-toe game back in the early 80s.
Yeah, so you were in the right profession to begin with. It was a growing field.
Right, that's right. But the important point there is that it was something that called out to me. And in my career as an entrepreneur, I've realized that the best entrepreneurs and many successful people in any industry usually have an inkling of the type of project or the type of work that they were meant to do. And this inkling might come in the form of a hunch, a gut feeling. You know, Steve Jobs used to say, you know, follow your heart and your intuition. They somehow already know what you want to become. And I think that's very true. So the book is about learning to follow the clues to find that work and what you were meant to do.
Gotcha. Now, do you advocate following your clues using a certain path or process for tuning in to yourself, or what?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways. The types of clues that I talk about in the book come to us through our dreams while we're asleep. They come to us while we're awake. I'll give you a very simple example. I live in Mountain View, California for most of the year, and I'm in Boston for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
But, you know, I walked by this building in downtown Mountain View, and I had this funny feeling about this building. And I thought, huh, that's odd. And then I forgot about it. And then a couple of years later, you know, as I was looking for office space, I ended up starting a game startup, and we ended up in that same building. The idea there is you could logically say, well, the reason I got that as an office is because I had that hunch a few years earlier. But as I started to study quantum physics, I realized that you could also say that the reason I had the hunch a few years earlier was because one of my future selves, one of my probable future selves, was going to have an office in that building.
And one that maybe you had some affinity with.
Exactly. And then that was the future that ended up coming true at a particular timeline. And so as I started to study more about quantum physics, I realized that this happens to us all the time. We're getting messages from our potential futures. In quantum physics, the idea is that there are all these different futures. They're each sending information, and you're noticing different ones. And which of those timelines we go on is a part of the act of conscious observation.
So you're saying we have many potential futures that are simultaneously transmitting their signals from wherever they are, and we're choosing the ones that we want to create our reality. Something like that?
That's right. Something like that. It's almost like we're navigating to the particular one.
Yeah.
And so that's one aspect of quantum physics that I thought applied to this phenomenon. Another is this idea of parallel lives. So as we make decisions within one interpretation of quantum physics, we create parallel universes, which for every time we make a small or a big decision. So it's possible, you know, in this life, I'm a video game entrepreneur, I'm an author, I do a lot of creative stuff. But once I was driving by Stanford University and I had this clear vision of myself teaching a class, right, being a professor. And in this life, I chose not to go down the academic route, even though, you know, I spend my summers at MIT. But I could see that as a potential parallel self. And, you know, Michio Kaku and other physicists talk about this, where sometimes we have a feeling of deja vu in a particular place or with a particular person. And so they could be coming from our parallel selves, or they could be coming from our future selves. And that's really what Following the Clues is all about. It's about tuning into those and then navigating to the reality that we want to create.
Yeah, and speaking of navigating, you mentioned the concept of synchronicity. Could you explain that to the uninitiated listener?
Sure. So synchronicity is one of the main types of clues that I tell people we should pay attention to. The term was coined by Carl Jung, the famous psychologist. And he defines synchronicity as a meaningful coincidence. I like to say it's when we have a coinciding of an internal thought and an external event. Now, it could be that you think about a friend that you haven't thought about in years, and suddenly they call you.
Yes.
Okay, that's a very simple example where it's an A-causal connection. You can't say A caused B from a logical scientific perspective, and yet there is some connection that's going on there.
Yeah, something and, you know, wants to happen.
That's right, yeah. He told a great story about a woman who was telling him about her dream, and in that dream, she mentioned that there was an Egyptian scarab, which is like a beetle. Mm. And just at that moment, as she told him that, a beetle came and smashed into the window or hit the window, was tapping on it. He opened the window and the beetle flew in. It was the closest thing to a scarab in Europe that you would find at that time of the year. And he said, look, there's your beetle. Now, you can't say that her talking about the dream caused the beetle to be there, yet there was a meaningful connection between the two, and it turned out to help her in her therapy in that case.
Yeah, so pay attention. And would you say that we all have these synchronicities? It's a matter of just paying more close attention to them?
Yeah, very much. I mean, I think we're often having either synchronicity or feeling of deja vu, so it's important that we pay attention to our inner feelings about what's happening around us. And so the first rule of treasure hunting is it unusual? So I talked about the friend that maybe you haven't thought about in a while and you thought about them or you had a dream about them and then they call.
Yeah.
Well, if it's unusual, the second is, does it repeat? And so there has to be this repetition between the internal and the external. Hmm. And it could just be something that catches our attention that we never noticed before, but it's right there in front of us. I'll give you another example. I used to live in Boston back in the 90s, and I was thinking of spending time on the West Coast and the East Coast at the same time. I was in my 20s. I had no money. Not an easy thing to do back then.
Yeah. Still, bi-coastal was cool.
Right, it was cool, but I didn't even have a job.
Yeah.
I was thinking about whether I wanted to do this. As I started to go around New England, I started to notice these mermaids everywhere. Right? I mean, not real mermaids. There were statues of mermaids, pictures of mermaids. And mm-hmm. it kept repeating, and it gave me that funny feeling, like this is an important symbol for me. And so I started to think about it, and I realized, you know, mermaid is somebody who is in both worlds, the world of humans and the world of fish.
Yeah.
And it became kind of an affirmation, a clue that I could take a small action to try to move towards living in two worlds. In that case, it was on the East Coast and the West Coast. But over time in my career, a lot of my writings, including this book, Treasure Hunt, my last book, Zen Entrepreneurship, has been about taking Eastern principles and bringing them to the West.
Yeah, East meets West, literally, in many ways. Riz, can you hold on a sec? We got to go to a commercial break. We'll be right back. Hold that thought.
Okay, 2 minutes, and Dr. Future will be back with our guest, the author of Treasure Hunt, Rizwan Rear.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Riz Burke, author of Treasure Hunt, Following Your Inner Clues to Find Real Success in Your Life. Now, you were talking about the dream of the mermaid at the break and that the mermaid represented two worlds, the sea and the land, in the case of the mermaid. In your case, you wanted to be bi-coastal, live on the East Coast and the West Coast in your lifestyle. So can you say again exactly how that mermaid appeared as a symbol in your...
Yeah, sure. So in the book, I talk about what I call the clue life cycle. So this is kind of a way to pay attention to these clues and a way to organize them. So
the clue life cycle.
The clue life cycle. So the clues go through stages. And the first stage is intuition. And that's when you notice something odd. So, you know, I was in some of the coastal towns around Massachusetts, let's say Salem, Massachusetts, or Rockport, Massachusetts, and I noticed there's a mermaid statue in a seafood restaurant. Turns out they'd been there all along. And I had been to those towns and even those restaurants many times, but had never noticed that particular statue. And then as I went to another restaurant or another place in town, I saw another mermaid. And so it was my mind was being drawn. It's almost as if we have an invisible hand pointing out things to us that are important at that time.
I can see that. Had you asked yourself at that point for a clue in figuring out how to become a bicoastal person? And then you were actively looking for clues, or Is that what happened?
I was actively thinking about the problem more so than looking for clues.
Okay, now that was an important part of the process, right?
Yeah, it's a part that we call incubating a dream or a clue, where you ask for the solution to a problem and then you watch what happens.
Okay, you hold that thought, you hold that as a focus for yourself at that point.
That's right, yeah. And then you just wait to see what your mind is drawn to. Now, it turns out that this process has actually been there in a lot of traditional religions as well. Like, sure. I thought about it more from the quantum physics perspective because I'm an engineer. Yeah. And I like to know how things work. But it turns out, my brother moved, I was born in Pakistan, and my brother moved back to Pakistan, and he wanted to marry this particular, young woman there, and he had to go through this formal process of asking her father. And her father said, well, I want to do istikhara. I was like, what is that? So I looked it up online and found out that it was a traditional Islamic practice where you would ask at night before you go to sleep, you would ask God, the angels, whoever, mm-hmm. for the answer, and then you would watch your dreams for 3 nights. And you would watch the world to see if any clues come to you.
Oh, cool.
And I was not approaching this from a traditional religious perspective, but that was an interesting experience.
That's true. That's very interesting. That's like a similar type of structure.
Yep, it's a very similar structure. So there are spiritual and traditional roots for the idea that we get messages, and then there's a more scientific engineering explanation for where these messages come from, which I said could be very much from a future self that's calling us. And this future self might be over a long period of time. So these patterns in our lives, they evolve over a long period of time. Sometimes we have what I call the green light, red light syndrome, where it looks like obstacles are melting away and we're being pointed in a direction, and then it looks like things slow down. I'll give you an example. Again, back in the 90s, I was thinking of writing a book about startups, and it's pretty hard for a new author to get an agent or a publisher. But the first agent I contacted said, yeah, I'd love to do it. And turned out I was coming to California in a couple of weeks, and she was in L.A. So I ended up meeting her, and it seemed like things were flowing. But then she was unable to sell that book. So it looked like the clues were pointing me in a particular direction. Yeah. But then it stopped. But what was important about that experience was she asked me, well, what book do you really want to write? And I said, well, I'd like to write a book about synchronicity in business. And that was literally 20 years ago, 1997. Wow. It's now, it hit 2017. And now the book is out. And so you can see that these patterns may be touching future selves that are very far off.
Yeah. Now, your intentionality, now in a more classical model of thinking, intentionality would be important as well. So you've had 20 years of intention as another force to consider in the creation of yourself writing this book then, right? So the more traditional approaches plus of whatever new thinking you're having on the topic work together to create this.
Yeah, that's right. And, I think it's important to have intentionality, but, often in the more traditional sense, people talk about creating the future that you want.
Yeah.
And I kind of step back and say, well, if you think of it more like a matrix of possibilities, some of which are more likely than others, given where you are and our own personal strengths and weaknesses. Like I might say, I intend to be an NBA basketball player. Well, that's probably not going to happen. That's just not my calling.
You're right.
I'm a computer geek, right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily. Not to say I couldn't go play basketball.
But in some strange parallel universe, that might exist.
It might exist. But the idea is, I think we all have these inclinations and these potential possible futures.
Sure,
so rather than simply pushing hard and trying to create it, it's kind of like Tai Chi versus one of the harder martial arts, right? It's a softer way of approaching it, where you're listening and looking for the path that opens up to you. That's revealing a possible future.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it's a different way.
It's listening. It's like a lot more listening in the equation. Mrs. Future has a question for you.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if you consider the possibility of identifying the difference between fantasy and spiritual path. Is there a difference? Can you tell from your own imagination which thing is real and which thing is just wannabe?
Well, that's very true, and I think we have a lot of wishful thinking. And so part of the reason for the clue life cycle, and I was talking about the stages earlier, is so that we can bring together the right brain and the left brain. The right brain is the intuitive side that maybe has the visions and recognizes the clues, but the left brain is the one that makes plans and is a little more skeptical. And so for somebody who jumps in too quickly, they might have a dream of Italy and says, hey, they're going to move to Italy the next day. Well, you probably don't want to just quit your job and do that the next day. So you go to the next stage, which is interpretation, and then you go to the next stage, which is confirmation. So during the confirmation, you're looking for additional clues that can help you build a case for wanting to go down a particular path. And this is pretty important in the business world. It's also important in science. A lot of scientists will go off and have a vision of a solution. like, for example, Einstein with his famous thought experiment on a ray of light, or Mendeleev when he was looking to create the periodic table. He was dozing off in front of a fireplace, and suddenly he saw all the elements arranged in a table.
Yeah.
So the vision is great, but by itself it's not enough. He had to then go and actually create the table and figure out what the rows were and how the elements fit together. So you still have to do the work, whether in business or engineering.
Yeah, that's why it's still just a clue, not the actual manifestation of it.
Yeah, so then you have to go down that path. And then there's what I call anti-clues. And we often have these repetitive patterns where we unconsciously get into bad situations. We think it's intuition, we think it's spiritual path, but it's really just us repeating our patterns again and again.
Mm.
You know, I was on a radio show a couple of years ago with a woman. She said, you know, I keep getting into these business relationships that I can't get out of. And I said, okay, well, let's talk. Has this happened at least three times? She said, yeah. Okay, that's an external pattern. Usually external patterns are a result of some internal pattern that starts off as a strength, but because we end up unconsciously repeating it, it tends to be a weakness. And for her, the strength was she could get excited about getting into these new business relationships and brainstorm with people, but she would then sign on the dotted line right away and then later regret it. And I said, well, that sense of excitement is her anti-clue in a way. The next time it happens, she needs to take a deep breath, step back, wait for the confirmation stage and say, let's wait a week or two. And that becomes the clue that she might still go down the business relationship that makes sense, but she won't impulsively be going down every business relationship that she gets excited about and then later regret. And so those are our patterns. And
yeah.
There's a good Chinese saying about dragons, and I think patterns are like the dragons, where it says, if you try to fight the dragon, it will defeat you. If you try to feed the dragon, it will eat you. But if you learn to ride the dragon, you can take advantage of its might and its power. And our patterns are our strengths, but they can become weaknesses if we don't learn how to ride them properly.
Would you say our patterns are complex enough to be almost considered to be alive, like they have a life of their own?
Definitely, they change. They're the sum of our fears, our hopes, our dreams, and our habitual tendencies. And turns out the ancient yogis had terms for these. You know, they said as we go through life, we get these what they call samskaras, which are imperfections in these clear sheets that surround us, which they call kosas. And as it bends the sheets and the imperfections get there, we can't see clearly what's happening until we're making decisions based off of limited information. And then they even had terms for what are called vasanas, which are the things we do over and over again because of these internal paths.
Mm. So they personified them, they anthropomorphized them, as we might say here. But they could be alive, though. So that means that sometimes they have to be slayed or fed or ridden, the behaviors themselves. To look at some of your other projects in which this kind of thinking helped to bring them in, like you mentioned, you took a chance on an indie film and a new indie filmmaker.
Yeah. So, you know, I've had lots of experiences like this in my life where a combination of synchronicity and serendipity you know, have led me down a certain path. And in this case, I started off as a tech entrepreneur and then as an investor. And I happened to be in Arizona. We were visiting some Native American monument somewhere in Arizona. And I had this funny feeling about stopping at a particular rest area that had a little store. We stopped. I looked around. I didn't see anything I liked. I decided to buy some water and then we were going to be on our way. And this newspaper article caught my eye.
Mm.
And I looked at it and it said, you know, these guys are trying to make a film on the Navajo Reservation, and they're raising money for it. And so I took that with me. It was that if I hadn't stopped, I wouldn't have seen the article. And then I got in touch with these guys, and turns out nobody would fund them because the guy was just out of film school. The actors were all Navajos who had never acted before.
Yeah, it was just their passion. But they were newbies on this.
It was a passion project.
Yeah.
And so I ended up becoming an investor because that's what we do in the tech world. We invest in risky things. This seems like a part of his path. And that's how I got to be an indie film producer.
And so how did the film do? How did it work out?
That one did reasonably well, actually. It showed all over the Southwest, and the profitable investment for me, which is very unusual in the film industry.
Yeah.
That started my career, and then I helped a lot of other films get made, including Knights of Badassdom, which had Peter Dinklage in there.
Yeah, wow.
Fantasy horror about a group of LARPers, like live-action role players, and some documentaries as well. Thrive, which was made by Foster and Kimberly Gamble, which is, I think they live right there near Santa Cruz.
That's right. Yeah, we know Foster and Kimberly.
Yeah,
they've had them on the show.
Interviewed them.
So we.
Oh, great. Yeah, so I was executive producer on Thrive and helped them get that
good.
Out.
Good. Yeah, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about that too, but we must go to CBS News break. Could you hold on, Riz? We'll be back after the news.
Sure.
All right, great. Okay, this is the Dr. Future Show. I'm talking to Riz Virk, Silicon Valley entrepreneur who's written a book called Treasure Hunt, Follow Your Inner Clues to Find True Success. We'll be back shortly. Mrs. Future, I believe, has some questions as well.
Absolutely. Dr. Future Show. We'll be back.
Me and Dell were singing, little runaway.
Let's run down that dream here. Okay, we're back. This is the Dr. Vitcher Show. We're talking to Rizwan Virk, author of Treasure Hunt, Following Your Inner Clues to Find True Success. Now, during the break, Riz, Mrs. Future, try to summarize what you were saying and this is what you came up with. Find your inner guru and turn its attention to your path of success. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that's great. And I would just, you know, at the end, I'd say follow the clues to your path to success.
Follow the clues. Okay. So the first thing is to recognize the clues. And I guess you're also saying we have to recognize the anti-clues.
That's right. So we don't want to just repeat our unsuccessful patterns. We want to use the clues to find the future selves that we really want to get to. And, you know, I use the analogy of a Indiana Jones film. You've probably seen Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Of course, yeah.
Your listeners. Now, wouldn't it be nice at the beginning of the film if Indy was presented with a map that just said, there it is, here's the X, just go get the Ark of the Covenant and you're done, right? Well, it might be fun, but it wouldn't be a very interesting movie, first of all.
It'd be the end of the movie, right.
Yeah, and secondly, that's not how it works. Usually you get one clue and you have to follow the thread of that, and that leads you to the next clue, and that leads finally to the treasure. And that's how I think life and our careers are. Like a good Indiana Jones film.
Okay, so, like, for example, we were just doing the news on how jobs are changing because of all the automation and AI that's going on right now. And so people are starting to think outside of the box about what their profession would be. And so this is a good time to practice some kind of personal treasure hunt to see what you really want to do in this life, given that the normal job path is gone or going.
Yeah, that this is a perfect time to do that. And I would say, look for the clues and the patterns that evolve over a longer period of time in your life. What are the things that you keep coming back to? Right, you might go to a particular job, but then afterwards you say, well, I really wanted to do this other thing, but I got distracted by this thing. And for me, two recurring themes. One has been this idea of bringing Eastern ideas into the West and merging the left brain and right brain. When I'm doing creative projects like video games or films, there's an element of that. And the second for me has been, you know, how do I help other people create their dreams? And so that's what led me to be an investor. That's why I run this incubator program at MIT. That's why I wrote this book. And so each of us has themes that we come back to in our lives, and it's a good time to think about those and then to look for the clues that can confirm those themes.
Okay.
Lead us down a path that might help us be more successful and engaged.
Okay, now we've been talking about its path to success in terms of career, but can you also focus your inner guru on, say, health issues?
Yes, absolutely. Health issues that could be related to where to live, could be relationship issues. When we talk about patterns, right, we all know people who get into similar relationships, but with different people.
Right? Relationships, right. Right, that's it. Finding true love. That's a good one.
Right, and so our patterns affect us. Actually, they're probably more than anywhere else, right?
Yes.
And so learning to recognize them is important. And the clues can come really about anything. I'll tell you a quick story. There was a woman who, a friend of mine, she was thinking of buying a house in Arizona. This was before the housing crash in 2008, and she couldn't find one. Yeah. And she was a little down because of that. And she was driving home, and there was this car that was in front of her for like half an hour. It just wouldn't go. And she just was drawn to it. That's when you know there's a clue. It's when something is in your line of sight, and you can't help but notice it. And there was a bumper sticker on there that said, "Not all those who wander are lost."
Ah.
Oh, that's interesting. And then
another clue.
Browsing the internet, and she saw the same phrase again, and she's like, "What is this?" And she asked me, and I said, "Well, it's actually from a poem in The Lord of the Rings. Not all that is gold glitters, not all those who wander are lost." But
right,
she wasn't
right.
even a fan of The Lord of the Rings. This was a message for her about where to live, and it was okay not to settle down, and it was a good thing because she ended up wanting to leave Arizona a few years later, and if she had gotten a mortgage after the crash, she might not have been able to leave.
Hilarious. Wow.
And, you know, as a follow-up on that clue, I've been talking about that particular story recently because of the launch of my book. And here I was driving down, I think it was 101, and there was this car in front of me with a compass on its wheel on the back, like a Jeep where they have the wheel.
Yeah.
And it just wouldn't get out of my way. And so I just had to pay attention to it. And I looked at it, and I realized the text around the compass said, "Not all those who wander are lost." And I had never seen that phrase anywhere. And I had been thinking about myself and my own career because I've always had a startup or a fund that I've been involved with. And now I'm just kind of helping other people with their startups. I'm not doing anything full time myself. And so it was a message to me coming off of the clue, the repetition. It was unusual and it repeated and I was drawn to it. So it's an interesting clue, an interesting message for me too.
Yeah, fascinating. And you're saying this could be true for all of us. So if we just pay attention, we'll find these.
It could happen in our dreams as well. We haven't talked about dreams much, but
that's true. Now, what is it about that? Can you tell the difference between a prophetic dream and a scary dream? Or
the Tibetans just break it into what they call karmic traces dreams, which happen when we first go to bed, and they're just regurgitating stuff, and clear dreams. A lot of Native American traditions talk about little dreams and big dreams, where little dreams are kind of everyday dreams, and big dreams are bringing us information. I actually started thinking about the physics and time and the past and the future because I had a dream in my very first startup. I had a dream about this competitor that I hadn't seen in a year, and I went into the office that morning and I got a call from somebody at IBM saying, oh, hey, you know, we have this product coming out. I wanted to let you know before the public announcement. It's going to compete with yours. It might crush your product. We just wanted to give you a heads up. Well, at first I was a little upset that it was going to have a product that was going to crush ours. IBM's a big company. But then I said, well, how come I never heard of this before? Who made it? And he said, oh, it was that competitor of yours. And we bought them last year, and they've been working on this in secret. And it was the same guy I had the dream about that morning, and I'd never had a dream about him before, so it was an unusual dream. Right? And it repeated, and it was a clue for me to start paying attention to the fact that, you know, the future is seeping in. Somehow my dreams caught wind of information that was going to happen later that day.
Yeah, well, you see, that's the other thing, is it's unstuck in time. So how do you know how far in the future it's coming from?
You don't always know. So one of the rules of clues is that sometimes clues indicate direction.
Yeah.
Sometimes clues indicate timing. So rarely do they indicate both. So you may have a clue pointing you down a certain direction, but it may be a longer-term thing, or it may be a more independent thing. So that's why you use the clue lifecycle to take small actions and validate clues, and then they repeat over time. I'll give you another quick example. Right here in Silicon Valley, I was at Stanford Business School. I was a big fan of virtual worlds and video games. I was thinking about Linden Labs, which made the game Second Life.
Sure, yeah.
So I organized a lunch of students to talk about virtual worlds. Mm-hmm. And there was this guy that was not invited to the lunch, but a friend of mine there invited him. And so I thought, that's odd. Here's a guy who wasn't invited. He shows up. His last name was Linden. And I had organized a lunch to talk about Linden Labs, and Linden were the first virtual currency out there. Now, you might think, well, that's kind of a weird reason to do something in technology, but that was a clue and a thread, and I got to know that guy better. Turned out to be a great entrepreneur. I invested in their company, which was a company called Tapjoy. Huh. Did very well, more than paid for my Stanford business school
nice.
Tuition. And I had to get to know him and decide if I wanted to invest in his business. It wasn't like the clue by itself is enough. You have to follow the thread of the clues, just like in the Indiana Jones film, to eventually get the treasure.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that virtual reality could help accelerate this process of following your cues?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different applications of virtual reality. You mentioned my program at MIT called Playlabs, and we had a virtual reality company, for example, that was doing biofeedback and helping you learn to reduce stress through breathing. And you would be inside the virtual reality, and as you breathe, things would levitate or not, depending upon your heart rate. It had a little biofeedback sensor.
Yeah, that's cool.
And so it was a case, and it turns out they did the studies, and in virtual reality, it's actually more effective than just watching it on the screen because you're immersed, right? Mm. So you can get into a more receptive state. And part of learning to recognize and follow the clues, you know, is very much about learning to be receptive, and then some of the noise that comes to us. We have to block it out to listen to the inner voice. Steven Spielberg has a famous video where he tells his kids that the important dreams whisper to us. And we have to block out all the noise that's coming at our forehead head on to listen to this little whisper that's coming from the side. Mm. And that's true of many creative projects. I think that's true in business and many other places. So, yeah, I think that's an area where virtual reality and other technology may be helpful.
That'd be interesting, yeah. So I have noticed that I like to teleport now more than fly, even in virtual reality. And I'm wondering if that ability starts to seep into other realms of existence.
You know, it's interesting. In dreams, I tend to do teleporting as well as flying.
Really? In the dreams? Cool.
In dreams, flying is an indication sometimes that you're getting out of, like, the little karmic dreams.
Yeah.
And you're actually able to get in touch with other realities, lucid dreaming. Tibetans have a whole tradition of dream yoga, which is based on this idea of being able to wake up and recognize that you're in a dream, even though it appears real. Right? There's a great quote about dreams. I forget who said it, but he said, dreams appear to be real while we're in there.
Yeah.
Can we say any more of waking life?
Yeah. Yes, there has been some people trying to figure out how to use technology to wake yourself up into a lucid dream by biofeedback techniques with lights flickering in your eyes when you're experiencing REM, things like that. So perhaps the technology can help facilitate these things even more these days with what the capabilities we have. Which begs us the question, if everyone starts thinking this way, what kind of world could it be, in your opinion?
You know, in my opinion, going back to Jung, he's coined the term individuation, right?
Yes.
And so when people asked him about the sad state of affairs in Europe with World War One and World War Two, right? And what would make it better? And he said, if more of us were in the process of individuation, which is the process of becoming the person that we are meant to be,
yes,
right? That we would all become spiritual beings because we have certain strengths and weaknesses here. And if we all acted that way, we would be more successful. And I define true success as being in the right place at the right time, doing meaningful work, and making enough financially that you can get by and perhaps succeed financially as well. But it doesn't have to be a simple financial definition. Mm. It's about the meaningfulness of the work. If you're an artist, it's about being able to express yourself.
Hmm. So do you have a nice flow to your lifestyle now where you're like in a groove like a musician might be?
Yeah, I guess you could call it that. I have certain projects that I've wanted to do for years that now I'm finally able to do. And I tend to follow the clues to figure out which one is the right time now. You know, I'm working on some technology projects with Bitcoin and Ether and some ICOs. I'm also working on my book and working on helping other people get their projects launched.
Oh, fascinating. We're talking to Rizwan Virk on treasure hunting for finding your inner success.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're interviewing our guest, Rizwan Virk, who has written his new book, Treasure Hunt, Follow Your Inner Clues to Find True Success. And before I forget, let me mention his website for people who want to follow up with this fascinating conversation. You can look him up at zenentrepreneur.com. And you will find out more about his book, Treasure Hunt, and his previous books as well. If you want to call in to the show and ask some questions, we're here at 479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. Dr. Future, up to you.
Okay, back again. Yeah, we're getting some questions in over the net as well. One question, and this has to do with your East to West ideas, and I'm really curious about other types of East to West ideas that you have been integrating, but this particular question has to do about the inner teacher, the inner guru. Does it take a particular form? Does it have a certain personality when you know you've reached your highest self, if you will, or what? What's the...
Sure. Well, you know, it can. I mean, it depends on your personal set of beliefs. You know, as we look at the spiritual and religious traditions, as I mentioned earlier, you know, there might be guides that are pointing these things out to you to get you back on track. If we look at it more from an engineering perspective, which I like to do, which is how does it work? It could be that we're tuning into a deja vu of a parallel life, somebody, one of us that made different choices than what we made, or a future self. And so in that sense, it's about learning to pay attention to the feelings. And so each of us has a different sensation. So it's hard to describe what a feeling of deja vu is exactly, physically, right? But when I say I had a hunch or a sensation about this particular company or this particular idea, so it might be a tingling in your forehead. It could just be something in your gut, like a certain sensation. And so the reason that I tell people to write down their clues and build their own book of clues, kind of like in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where Sean Connery played Indy's father, and he had his Grail diary, right? And every time he saw a clue about where to find the Holy Grail, he would write it down.
Yeah.
And he built up a lifetime of clues, and that finally led him to that location.
Well,
and it was intertwined with his own search.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, and so certainly along those lines, Joseph Campbell talked about looking for clues as to who we are and as the next level of species evolution. Like, for example, what comes to mind as I'm talking to you is that are we transtemporal organisms? If we're talking to future selves, what does that make us to have that accessible all the time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really interesting because people say, well, you know, is there a device? Could I have a quantum device to talk to all these future selves?
And, well, yeah, we do, right? We have ourselves.
It's called our mind, right?
Yeah.
And the thing that distinguishes in quantum physics, you know, if you think of the traditional experiment of whether a particle of light is a wave or a particle,
yeah,
like it's both. And one interpretation of that is that the wave represents all the possible places the particle could be. And in our lives, it's all the possible futures and the potentialities. And you'll notice that they're not continuous. There are different places where it could end up. And then the particle is the one that we choose to observe in that moment in time. And so the reality, the present, is the one that is a result of our previous observations, consciously mapped with the set of probabilities, which is what I say is our treasure map. It's the set of things that we were here to do.
Mrs. Future has a question for you.
Oh, yes. I was wondering if you could share some of your techniques for, say, remembering your dreams or for accessing the subtle messages so that you remember them.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, dreams are interesting. It's a very complicated topic, and it's a very universal topic, right? Because everybody dreams.
Yeah.
In every tradition. And so, you know, some of the techniques that you can use is when you first wake up, usually we remember the dream, but within a few minutes, it starts to fade, right? And so one of the techniques is to give a title to your dream right while you're lying in bed, before you actually move. If you're laying on your right side, stay on your right side. Remember the dream and give it a title then and there. Because that way, even if you're going to write down the dream, in the book, there's a method for working with ordinary dreams, which is based on a method I learned from one of my mentors, Robert Moss, who has written lots of books on dreams. So there's a set of techniques you can go through to identify the symbols, but most important is at the very beginning, give it a title and what is the feeling? Did this dream leave you terrified? Did this dream leave you happy? Was it blah? Because the feeling of the dream is a key part of unlocking, you know, what it's trying to tell you. So those are two techniques. And then another technique is to honor the dream. And this is true not just of dreams, but of clues. And that is to go and do something concrete that brings the energy of the dream or the energy of the clue, and you take an action based on it. It could be drawing a picture. It could be going out, watching a movie. I'll tell you a great story that you'll recognize at the end, but there was a young man who was making B-movies, sci-fi movies, and he was in Italy, and he had a fever, so he couldn't go to the set, and he had this terrifying dream of robots emerging from the fire. He woke up and, of course, couldn't help but think about the dream, so he decided to draw a picture of a robot emerging from the fire. So that was his way of honoring the dream. He then showed it to his friend Gail, and she said, well, that's interesting. What's the story behind this? Why don't you write up the story and make it a screenplay? Well, that screenplay eventually became The Terminator, right? And that young man was James Cameron. And, you know, it launched many careers. But his initial thing was to draw out something he saw from the dream because it was very memorable.
Have you ever seen dream logic portrayed successfully in cinema?
In cinema? Yeah. You know, there have been some films, you know, What Dreams May Come is an interesting one. Mm-hmm. There's Made in Heaven, which was an 80s movie with Kelly McGillis, which was quite interesting in how they portrayed being on the other side.
Yeah, well, that's the key. I mean, how is it portrayed kind of affects what we believe.
That's right, yeah. And then within dreams, you know, logic runs differently, right? Or we might be in a dream and we recognize somebody that we've never actually known.
Right, and there's a certain kind of flow to it that's different from awake state consciousness. The transitions are different.
Yeah, and you can kind of learn to train yourself to recognize those. I used to read a lot of Castaneda, wrote his books back in the 70s, and he was given an exercise by his teacher to recognize his hands in a dream.
Right.
And that was his clue that he was dreaming, that this was a dream, not waking life. Others say you have this test. My test is, if I can fly, if I can lift up from my chair, then this must be a dream and not waking reality. And I'm trying it right now, and guess what? I'm not flying.
But if you were here talking on the
world.
But you could be talking on the phone and in virtual reality where it would look like you're
where
flying.
It would look like, and that's where I think virtual reality has the ability now to really integrate these dream worlds.
Exactly. I think so. Thanks. Exciting times. Hey, listen, we have a phone call in. Ms. Future, you want to bring up the caller?
Absolutely.
Who are we speaking with?
Hello, Krista. Welcome to the show.
Yes, it's Krista Kaya. This is an amazing show. Hi.
Krista, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
You have a question for Riz?
Yes, my question is about manifestation. You know, I hear about feel the emotion of what you want and then manifest it. And, you know, with his technique, I'm just wondering if he agrees with the kind of that new age line of if you feel it happening, it will happen, and where that factors into how he's succeeded in life and how he recommends people to reach their goals?
Sure, yeah. Great questions. And, you know, there's a lot out there about the law of attraction and visualize it and it'll come to you. And, you know, I am definitely a proponent of part of that, which is that you have to put out the intention of something that you would like to achieve. But I believe that there are things that we were meant to achieve. And if we're going to visualize something, it's almost better that the image come to you rather than you pushing out and creating the image, because then you're kind of fighting against it.
It's more of a yin than a yang in that.
Exactly. And I find that for me, the best visualizations that have come true have been ones where I was meditating and I just saw the image, and that became the image that I used as part of the manifestation process rather than struggling to create something. So I think that's where I agree with the idea that you have to put out the attention, but be open to the type of image that you use and be open to different types of possibilities. So, you know, I talked in my last book a little bit more about the four keys of manifestation, and intention is one of them, timing is one of them as well, but so are our personal patterns, right? Nothing holds us back from achieving our goals as much as we do ourselves sometimes, and it's because of how we unconsciously act and we make decisions in our lives that end up not taking us where we want to go. And so an awareness of patterns is also important. So I believe manifestation is a complicated topic, more complicated than we've been led to believe. But I believe there are certain things that just happen naturally and that we were meant to do. And that's when manifestation happens effortlessly at that point.
All right.
Great. So effortlessness is a clue.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Krista.
So,
see you later.
Thanks, Krista. Appreciate the call. Yes. So do you think the universe itself is alive? Do you think that's a fair question to ask at this point in time?
Well, it's an interesting question. One is the universe alive? Second, is the universe a simulation? Right? People have been asking.
Yeah, the big ones.
In Silicon Valley recently.
Yeah.
And I tend to go back to some of the ancient wisdom in Tibetan yoga. There's the six yogas of Naropa, and one of them is dream yoga. But their idea is that waking reality is a dream, just like the dreams we create each night. So it's an interesting way to think about what's going on around us. And the synchronicity and these clues are what I like to call glitches in the quantum matrix, right?
Yeah.
So I'm a video game designer, and when we create games, we create all these different scenarios that the user might go through. And we set conditions on when they might get there and when they might not get there and what obstacles they have to overcome in order to get to the next level.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's very possible that our lives have been set up in that way.
Yes, well, it's fascinating. I mean, we must have you on more often and explore these further, but we have to go right now. But can you give us your website so others can check into your work?
Sure. It's zenentrepreneur.com.
Z-E-N.
I have all my books there.
Okay, entrepreneur.com.
Z-E-N-T-R-E-P-R-N-E-N-E-U-R.com.
All right. Thank you, Rizwan Virk.
Yes, thank you, Rizwan. Appreciate your attention on this. Have a wonderful evening, and I look forward to chatting with you in the near future.
And we really enjoy your book, Treasure Hunt.
Our future selves are probably already in contact. So.
Thanks for having me on. Okay.
You bet.
All right. That's it. Another week here on the Dr. Future Show, and we'll be back next week.